You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes.
Hi, this is Dr. Bob Gottlieb, and you're watching the Best Practices Show.
Hey guys, thanks for watching the Best Practices Show, where we take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all over the world. And if you're looking to grow a practice, one of the things you have to do is change the way you think about what you do. And I have got the man today to talk about that. And we're going to talk about how you don't save teeth, but instead you save people's lives with Dr. Bob Gottlieb, one of my favorite people. And I'm not joking. I was telling Ben and Bob himself, you know how you eat a meal and you wait for dessert? Like, this is the dessert. Oh, I love this man. You're going to see how much fun we have together. It's a perfect way to end a great week. And so you don't want to miss this. So do me a favor, grab a pen and hit the share button. You're going to love this. Now, a couple show notes. We are shooting this live on Facebook. So if you're just hanging out, you're watching this. No, we're shooting this live. Ask some questions, add them to the feed, and I'll ask Dr. Bob himself. And you're going to see this guy is a wealth of knowledge, brilliant man. And we want you to get the answers while you're watching this. Or you can watch it later on. Continue to add questions to the feed. We'll do our best to give you the great answers because, again, we want you to get the most out of this. Now, love all the suggestions, even from this morning. Thank you guys for all the suggestions for shows, comments, things like that. We are now up over 39,000 followers on Facebook. 150,000 of you have visited us on iTunes. And I don't have anything to say but thank you. So we're just having fun. And bring great information. And today is no exception. You're going to love this. Now, my guest today, I'm just going to rave about him for a little bit before we bring him on, because I got involved with this thing called the Seattle Study Club years ago. Now, I was a little nervous. I was a little scared. You know, Dr. Michael Cohen had created this incredible thing called Seattle Study Club. I got a chance to see what it was all about. And then I got invited. And I was scared to death. And then I met this guy in the hallway and he just calmed me down. And ever since, I think it's been about 10 years, you and I have gotten to know each other. And over the years, our friendship has grown. You have not only become an incredible friend, but a great mentor, an awesome person just to hang out with. And on top of it, now you're in a fun stage in your career where you're now giving back. You built an amazing practice. And now you're teaching for us in some respects, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And many of the people that are watching this know exactly who you are because everybody knows Bob. But if somebody's watching this, because we have dental students watching this now, tell them who Dr. Bob Gottlieb is. Tell us your story. What do you do? Where do you practice? Give us a little perspective.
Thanks, Kirk. I'm sitting here in Seattle, Washington, in smoke land right now. We have I moved here from Chicago because we're the fresh air, and now we're worse than Beijing. But
but you saw sunlight yesterday, right?
Yesterday we saw the sky. Today okay. We don't. So let's see. Grew up in Chicago, went to dental school at University of Illinois. Always loved perio, so you know I'm wacky because I like cleaning teeth more than grinding on teeth. And got lucky enough to go to the University of Washington for perio school. back in 1812. No, it was 77. It was close to 1812.
Yeah.
And, then I was able, I went back to Chicago after doing Imperial School in Washington, taught a little bit at the University of Illinois and then Pacific, and then came out to Seattle. Been practicing for 38 years out here now. So this is my 42nd year of practice. I practice with Michael Cohn. So being the guru of the Seattle Study Club, we're in on all the good stuff. I have a practice in Seattle and have a practice in Eastern Washington. So, yeah, 42 years.
Yeah, it's awesome.
A lot of gums.
And you're representing today. Look at that. You got
it's big game tomorrow. We're a week away from football. Next week, we start down at Auburn. So, big football.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I love this topic because you and I were talking before we got started, like, don't save teeth, but save people's lives. Before we get into the how, because you and I are going to go cover the how, I want you to talk about this because you've seen some of the best dentists in the world come all the time. Why is this topic and this mindset so important in dentistry and in a healthy career?
There's a couple of parts to it. The one part is, for the foundation of dentistry, you need to get some perio under control or the foundation's going. We've talked about that before where, it's a foundation for health and it's a foundation for your dentistry. Another part is, we're moving into the era where, I've been doing perio for 42 years and it's, easily the most, ignored or less area, the area that's less satisfying for dentists, the less concentrated for dentists. You know from your clients that the percentage of perio procedures are, not the greatest. And so for 37 years, I've been lecturing on this, hoping that people would be inspired to move forward. I think we're in a new era now where there's more incentive to get people healthy because we know the mouth is actually part of the body.
Yeah. Now go back to this because I want to go back to what you said. You said it's ignored and less satisfying. Why is that? Like, just give us the down and dirty. If I'm a new dentist, why is perio ignored and less satisfying?
Well, I think it's both sides. I think the one side of the coin is that the dentists like to fix teeth. I think they're not there to not fix teeth. They're there to fix teeth. And, they even, ship. They actually have a referral system in their own office called a hygienist where they refer out the perio to the hygienist so they don't have to even deal with it. And the second part is I don't think patients come in saying, get my gums healthy. I think the patients come in saying, I want a whiter teeth or a better bite or, prettier teeth. So the confluence of those two issues easily allows people to put perio on the back burner.
Yeah. And as a restorative dentist, I don't know that you could stress enough. The foundation for everything is perio. I mean, you can't do anything without great perio, but do you think it's, do you see this trend happening? I mean, are people getting healthier now, Bob? Do you see people coming in and go, wow, their perio, everything's much better. Or is it getting worse? Where are we headed as a culture and where is dentistry headed in that respect?
I don't think it's changed a bit.
So really?
I think I think when I started about 50% of the people had periodontal disease and bone loss type of periodontal disease, and about 30% had gingivitis, and all the new studies that come out all the time show about the same numbers. There's a different way of ignoring it than it was before, and it's been cyclic in terms of people's emphasis or de-emphasis of it. But in general, the numbers still are about the same, which is why if you lecture for 37 years, I could have just hit my head against the wall and gotten as far as I've gotten so far.
Yeah. And I want you, because you and I were talking before, one of the most frustrating things as an influencer, as an educator, is when you go and you speak and nothing happens. And then you go and, it doesn't have to be with a consulting group or whatever, but like there are some people that go, oh, that's interesting. And then they don't do anything. Why is that? Like, why does that happen in dentistry?
Oh, boy. Well, I think a couple of things. One is the economics of it. The hygiene, if we make the 3-to-1 return and we can do that easily by just recalls and all that, we're pretty happy. And so from a business point of view, there looks like there's less opportunities. Although if you do perio, you'll have, much better than 3-to-1 ratio. I forgot my other thought because I'm 100 years old.
No, you're not. So, now, Yeah.
Repeat the question.
I don't remember the question. I just enjoyed it. Now, I want to go back to the topic, though, because, like, it's so important as a young – I say this to dental students all the time, and you're saying this almost the same thing. There are dentists that fix teeth, and there are dentists that change lives. It's not the same business. It's not that one is bad and one is good. Now, we can make that argument, but the bottom line is it's a mindset. You got to go in and think, look, I'm not just looking for crowns. I'm not just looking for implants. I'm not just looking for production here. I got to think of a little different, because I've watched you communicate with patients. And you're passionate, and you're at the point in your career where you're not going to filter things. You're going to tell people the truth because you want them to do something to protect their health for a long term. Would you agree?
Well, I would tell you that, yes. I think the point is, are we healthcare practitioners or are we body repair people? Do we repair the body of the teeth, you know, making new veneers and, you know, body repair, or are we worried about their health? And if we're worried about their health, then we knew we need to do what's best for them in all ways, shapes, and form. And for me, getting their gums healthy is the most important part. Mm-hmm. You know, the teeth are great, but if you have gum infection affecting your whole body and decreasing your prognosis for living, it doesn't seem like having a nice veneer on number 8 makes any sense.
Right.
And so I know that you need to stretch yourself because you need to explain to people why you're moving in that direction where they're not coming in for that. But it's pretty clear to me that most, 8 out of 10 patients that come to your office have some degree of periodontal disease, which then affects their health, and it should be addressed and treated.
Right. And with the advanced research and all the things we're seeing, we used to be able to see, you know, say years ago in perio, it could be linked. And now we can say systemically, a lot of this is linked. I mean, we do have the research to be able to support all these things, which gives us a greater opportunity to present a better path for a patient, don't you think?
Well, you know, patients are much more willing to accept treatment now. If, you know, we, in every one of our consults, we're explaining to them that, yeah, I'm going to save your teeth, but that's not important. What's important is I'm going to improve your health, decrease your chances of systemic issues. And there was a hope, you know, being a periodontist, you always kind of cling on hopes of where people would care about perio, even somewhat the way you would. And you know, this is a hope of periodontists now, is that general practitioners will cling on to the fact that they could have a significant influence on the patient's health, that it could actually elevate the stature of dentistry, that, you know, we're more of a medical field than a dental field. You could have people live longer, avoid heart attacks, strokes. So yes, it's you're in the conversations with patients now where there's always a conversation about improving your health. And adding on to that, I mean, most people come in with these long lists of medicines and ailments, and you know, they're at risk already, and without curing the periodontal disease, their risk is even greater.
Right, and I got to ask you the question, that because I do get this question. You know, young dentists are like, I don't know if I want to be a periodontist. Perio is dead, and like from what I see, it is not. There's so much to do for years and years and years. Fly right into that storm, because you know, even like a great doctor like Eddie Morales, who's just like, he's come out and he comes out and watches, he's like, oh my gosh, I just have a different way of thinking about this. What would you say to young kids in dental school considering a future in perio? What would be some of the things you tell them?
For me, it's been a great career.
Right.
And so in perio, I think it's going to be revived because of the medical connection. So mm-hmm. I think that's a possibility. I will say also that in general, in this, you know, is on top of what we talked about already, people don't love doing perio therapy. So as a periodontist, you know, we really had 3 areas of treatment. We would fix the gums, we would do grafts, you know, treat gum disease, do soft tissue procedures, and do implants. Well, the whole world wants to do implants, and so we're, you know, as a periodontist, we're sharing more of that. But mm-hmm. nobody really wants to treat periodontal disease. And so somebody who is astute and committed to treating periodontal disease will always, there'll always be a place for that person.
Yeah.
Practitioner.
Absolutely. Now, another thing, you and I are going to do a couple shows on this, but one of the things that you said earlier is you want to be the best to do your best. One of the things about saving people's lives is you got to be in a good position, healthy yourself. Now, I even watched you look so good. Like, you've been really taking care of yourself. Like, you and I used to hang out years ago and you're like, nope, now you take care of yourself and you're just, you got more energy. You do have to be in a good position in order to be able to help people. It can't be this conflict you feel internally, right?
Well, I don't think the doctor that's overweight and smoking cigarettes is going to inspire people to be healthy. So, I mean, so people, you know, look at me and say, hey, you don't look 68. I'm thinking they're saying you look 65, 66, but you don't look 68. But, you know, I think it's important to, you know, it's a lifestyle. You're selling a lifestyle. You're selling life. You know?
Yeah.
And I mean, we talk about the teeth part too, but it's, you know, it's way big. The whole game is way bigger. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So if I'm a young dentist, where do I start with the whole don't save teeth, save lives thing? Like, give me kind of a structure. What would you say to a 32-year-old dentist who says to you, hey, Bob, I understand it, but I got 5,000 patients and they're all PPO. So I don't have time to save people's lives. What would you say to them?
I would say get out of the PPOs.
Because in order to be able to do people's best interest, let's just talk the truth of the economics. You can't have other people making decisions for you, which would include the insurance companies.
Sure. I was just being a snot there. So, I mean, the reality of treating periodontal disease is that once you explain to people what the disease they have and the consequences, the great majority of them are interested in enrolling in a program. There was a, and there's a difference between getting people enrolled in periotherapy and getting people healthy. So there are two steps to the program. Most of the dentists that I've worked with that have the best perio programs have both parts of the programs. But, you know, if you give people a tour of their mouth and explain to them what's going on and they see it and explain what pockets mean and what bleeding means, they're game to move onward and do the initial treatment of periotherapy without any doubt. So it's just a matter of focusing on it during your examinations. And if the doctor does the examination, they need to be pervy at how to examine for perio and talk to perio patients in such a way that motivates them or inspires the patient. And if your hygienist is doing it, I'm pretty sure that the hygienists care more about perio than dentists do. But the gap there is the dentists are more interested in the restorative and tend to, you know, not support the hygienists to the degree they need to you know, get people healthy. So, you know, in my hands, the most important part of getting people enrolled in perio is the examination process.
Yeah. Now, give us again, you and I talk about this all the time, is that I agree with you in the examination process, but I hear words like debridement, deep cleaning, perio, gingivitis. It falls flat. A lot of these words are very technical words. You can see patients. This is what I see a doctor trying to describe it, and then the patient goes like this. You know what I mean? And you see it. One of the things that you've probably learned, I want you to shed some light on this, is that your ability to go farther in treatment planning and communicate is communicating with patients. You said, talk to them in a way that inspires them, that they can understand that. Give us some perspective on how you describe perio disease to a patient who's never heard this before or never understood this.
Well, I think it's more of a show than a talk.
Okay, tell me why.
So, well, I think people need to see stuff because I think talk is cheap. You know, you and I have had some nights where we know about that, but if we're talking, but we won't talk about that right now. We'll talk.
Right.
But for me, the easiest way to give people understand what's going on in their mouth is to give them a tour of their mouth. And so we try to explain to them what a pocket is before we put a instrument in their mouth. And then we put a mirror in their hand and poke their mouth in such a way where we show them what the difference between a healthy area and a diseased area is. And by doing that, they're already on board because they're making the self-diagnosis. So, and that's really the way that we are able to motivate people to move in that direction. So I could be more explicit, but that's really kind of the game.
Wait, you don't have a TV down in front of their face and they're watching CNN while you're doing all the probing? And I'm saying that facetiously, but that's what I see.
Yeah. So, you know, we spend time at the exam trying to talk to the people while they're there. And, you know, and I'm lucky because I'm a specialist. They're all there because they flunked out of their general dental office and got sent to me. And, you know, you ask me how are things now relative to the past. You know, I get much harder, much more advanced cases than I ever did. The healthier, earlier cases we don't get. But, you know, we talk to them and try to explain the focus of being in gum disease is important. And, no, we draw a picture. I actually draw a picture on my glove of what a tooth looks like and what a pocket looks like. And we take a probe and have a mirror and let them look at it and try to let them see what's going on. So, no. And then if you can train them to how it feels, the difference between a non-bleeding versus a bleeding pocket, and if you can train them what a good number is versus a bad number is, you can be doing exams, and before you're at the end of the exam, they're already asking you what you can do to fix those issues.
Right. Now, here's a couple of that I get all the time. Like, what about mobility? So when you see mobility, how are you describing? Because some people go, oh, look at wiggles. It's not a big deal. It's a huge deal. Or when you look at an x-ray and you're looking at what, how do you describe bone loss? Because I've seen some treatment plans. I'm like, I'll say to the dentist, dude, she's got bone loss. And they'll go, I know. I'm like, you're not going to tell. They're like, I know. I don't want to tell her in an effort that it might overwhelm her. So just speak to those two. Because I get those challenges and I'm like, oh.
Sure. Well, I think what I'm trying to do always is do things with patients that I know will have them commit to action, right?
Okay.
So I don't try to do things that won't affect them in such a way that will move them forward. So when I check for mobility, if a patient doesn't have sensitivity and chewing, or the tooth doesn't move a ton, they poo-poo it and they don't think it's an issue. So you know, we do the two mirrors and look at the tooth and look at the one. So everything's kind of visual with us. They got a mirror and we're showing them. But the tooth has to have significant mobility or we don't talk about it because it's a negative incentive. You know, I barely saw it move. What are you talking about? My teeth are loose. Okay. Mm-hmm. Same thing with bone loss and x-rays. If the x-rays show a ton of bone loss and you can show it started here and it's down to here now, that makes a difference. But these little 5 and 6 millimeter pockets, you can't tell the difference, you know. So first of all, half the time, I can't read the x-ray for the bone loss. so how's the patient? So, I mean, the patients aren't there to get x-rays. So to me, it's see and feel, right? It's a see and feel exam. So if I can show them what's going on and they can feel the difference between a healthy pocket and a bad pocket, that's more important than the x-rays or the rest of that. So The most important thing to me is that first part. I mean, I don't think you need to do much more than that. And then there's the second part, right, is being authentic and being passionate and being committed to it, you know. So I'm not motivated to treat periodontal disease. I'm inspired, right? It's from my heart. It's my career. It's what I find important. And so and I love implants and I sell restorative dentistry and, you know, we do tons of comprehensive cases, but you know, my passion is getting you healthy. And so we spend all the time talking about health and disease. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you're either a diseased or you're healthy. There's no, it's like pregnant or not pregnant. And in dentistry, it's you're sort of healthy, you're sort of diseased. No, either the gum pockets are small and they're not bleeding or they're deep and they're bleeding.
Black right. And white. Right. Now back up, because this might be a trivial concept for some people, but it's a huge one in the overall industry of dentistry. It's called minimizing language. And go back and describe that. So when you talk about pregnant, it's the words a little, just, you know, watch. Right. Can you just, for a younger dentist or maybe somebody who still repeats that, give us some perspective on that.
Well, It's back to that same thing again. Either you think periodontal disease is important or not.
Right.
And the problem is, in my mind, is that people don't think it's important. And I think they're worried about talking to patients about it because they don't think people care about it that much. And so instead of telling them, you know, there are days after days where I get cases sent to my office where the teeth are about to fall out. And allegedly, there hasn't been a big stink made by the dentist to get them to see me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so the minimization has gone on forever. Now, you know, I've done this for 42 years. So I know there's lots of times the dentist speaks to the patient and they ignore it. So I'm not trying to vilify the dentist in the process. But what you're saying is true. If you had a patient and the patient had 7 and 8 millimeter pockets and you did the examination the way I showed you and explained to the person the infection and it affects their body, and at that same examination they had an occlusal carious lesion on tooth number 18, what do you think they would talk about when they went home for dinner that night? I got a cavity, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're being a dentist working in the perio field, there is no ability to get any compliance if you minimize it to any degree. So everything actually has to be hyperinflated relative to the seriousness of the disease. Now, that doesn't mean you need to show when they're in therapy, they need to know that progress is being made, but there's no diminishing the effects of the disease and the status of the disease.
Yeah, and let me give you the natural progression of these questions too, because again, we get them. I mean, your wife is an amazing coach for us, in full disclosure, Jerry, and she does this all the time. We call it clinical calibration. Bob, I hear what you're saying. I've been to education. I get it. How do I get a group of people? Because the hardest thing about running a business is that you have to handle people. Would you agree? Like every entrepreneur sure. comes to me. I had one come to me yesterday. They're like, wow, I never thought dentistry would be this hard. I go, is it the dentistry? They go, no, the dentistry is easy. It's like, it's all these people. Like I got people and now I got to get them on the same page. So 42 years, how would I get people on the same page so that we're all saying the same things and we share the same core values and we're communicating consistently with patients? Give us some perspective on what you've learned in that much time in dentistry.
Well, that's if I had the answer to that, I'd be out consulting on team instead of
parents. Okay. You're not prescribing perfect here, but you've learned a few lessons. What lessons have you learned?
So, I mean, it starts with the why, right? It starts with the why. So if people don't share that same why and passion about saving lives and getting people healthy, you're never going to be there. Right. And so, you know, we talked about this already. The doctor and the hygienist have to feel the same way about treating periodontal disease. And so that's where it starts. And what happens in most offices is there isn't a meeting of the minds or a calibration between what their expectations are, what is disease, what is health, what are we going for, you know, how important is it relative to the rest of the procedures we do in the office. So there needs to be some, you know, collaborative tension in talking about this. Through the years, when I started teaching these perio courses, I taught the hygienist only because they're hygienists are really periodontists without knives, okay? So I'm, you know, my mentality is way closer to the hygienist than it is to a doctor because they're worried about teeth and I'm worried about gums. Now, I'm not that small, okay? My world is bigger than the gums, but it starts there. And so it starts with the doctor and the hygienist getting on board. So I taught these courses to hygienists only and it went nowhere because they go back and the doctor would laugh. It's sort of like when a doctor goes to the course and he comes back and nothing happens, right? Because the staff goes, he'll simmer down in a day or two.
Right.
And so then we started having the course with the doctors and that helped a little bit, but you need the staff. You know, the receptionist has to tell people that are calling that don't want to come in for their maintenance, that it's more important to be at a maintenance than anything else. And instead of saying that's no problem, and we'll schedule you again, as opposed to if they called to cancel a bridge appointment, the receptionist would kill herself to make sure they come back in. So it's a whole office thing, and it's what you're saying is true. And it's, we spend a lot of time working on that as an office. And in the courses we've given, we spend a lot of time having the staffs work together to try to get on the same wavelength.
Yeah, absolutely. And naturally, you're going to run into challenges as you get to know more about perio and restorative process. But I get this question all the time, Bob, and I want to dish it to an expert. Okay, so I'm a young GP. I understand what you're saying. We talk to patients until we're blue in the face about their disease. They go, I don't care. They don't do anything. Do I continue to treat them? Because there's legal implications to that, isn't there? Like, what do I do? Like, I'm stuck. Do I continue treatment? What do I do? What would you say to that?
I would say that I would be interested to know what their definition of treatment is. See, my wife is being the consultant. I could play with you for a couple hours here, just asking questions.
It's Friday afternoon.
I don't know if I ask questions or if I say I'm curious that I'm safe. Okay.
Right. Go ahead.
So the answer is, if you're a dentist, what do you really need to do to people as a dentist? Right. You need to take care of the carious lesions. You need to take care of the gum disease. I should, you know, these are a bunch of doctors, probably. I should probably say periodontal disease. I'm used to talking to patients, and so
go right there. Go right there. Go for it.
And then the third thing is you want to control forces, okay? And so if you're talking about treating people, yes, you need to handle their caries, but you don't have to. You know, patient comes in even with an emergency like a fractured number 8, but has periodontal disease everywhere. There's this thing called temporary restorations. Have you ever heard of them? By the way, temporaries. And so, like, you can put a temporary on there and then, you know, let the patient know that as soon as they get healthy, they can get the permanent restoration. So it's a lot like dealing with your kids. You know, these patients are like your kids. And if you give them the reward of what they don't want when they haven't done what their responsibility should be, which is get their mouth healthy, then why do they think you think it's serious, right? You need to let them know the gum disease is serious. So, yes, can you take care of carious lesions? Yes. Should you be putting bridges in or implants in people that have disease? No. So, you know, I mean, I think they need to get where you're at in the continuum of treating periodontal disease as being important. So, yes, you treat them, then there's plenty of stuff to treat, but not the end game stuff, the beginning. Yeah.
Do you finally cross a line as a practitioner, maybe like 20 years into it, where you're like, okay, I'm just getting older. I'm not doing this anymore the way I used to do it. Because I love what Chris Ramsey says, mutual friend. He goes, just because you don't want to do the right thing doesn't mean I'm going to do the wrong thing. He's at a point in his career where he's just going to say that now only because he's just not going to do the wrong thing. Would you agree with that? Is there a certain point where you just get older and you care less about what people are going to do? Now, I won't say that. Let me say this. It's not that you don't care. You're just not putting – you're less tolerant of the way it used to be.
Well, I think that's one way of looking at it.
Okay.
I think the other way of looking at it is you care so much, you're only going to do the right thing.
Right, right.
So that's a twist on that one. So, you know, I know Bob, but, you know, I really am getting Alzheimer's right
now. No, Chris.
Chris Randall, I love Chris. And, you know, we talked about this a lot, you know, about, you know, doing the wrong thing because they did the wrong decision. And we don't ever do that. So I don't really, you know, but I don't think that I'm getting crotchety. I think I'm being more true to my values.
Right.
And so I have a value being a practitioner that I'm only going to do to people. These are people, right? Those guys in our chairs are like people, and we don't treat them like people. We treat them like patients, and they're not patients. They're living human beings that should be treated with the courtesy and the integrity that we have. And what that means is making right decisions for them. They're like your kids. They'll never know enough to make the right decision.
Right.
So your job, this is that authenticity or being the best you can be, is, you know, we talk about we're going to do the best thing for you, period. Right. And so, you know, it's, you know, cleaning people's teeth regularly, making sure they don't have cavities. You don't have to do any more than that on people.
Right.
That's what they really need.
Absolutely. No. I just have so many questions. I have like 90 more questions because so folks settle in, grab a beer. We're going to be here for hours. No, just kidding. Like you and I are passionate.
Hold on. I'm having my beer.
oh, you're representing with a cup now too. Look at you. Oh, wait, this is the coffee cup that my wife is. Do more of what makes you happy, which might lead into our next question. Now, this is a leading question because you and I are both passionate about this, but I want you to talk about when you talk about saving people's lives, Let's twine in interdisciplinary and multidisciplinary care and the future of that, because I really believe that in order to do your best work, you got to do the stuff that you're really good at. And where do you think dentistry is headed? And what would be some of the advice that you have as you've watched people try to do everything that they're good at in this whole process? Now, again, it's a leading question, but I want you.
This is great. So they're already pissed off at me because I'm telling them they're not doing perio. So now let's take it up a couple notches. Let's take it up a couple notches. Let's poke them right in the eye. Let's have everybody that thought they wanted to listen get off the damn thing.
Absolutely. So, I
mean, we come into it with a prejudice. If you're a specialist, you spent a bunch of years going to school learning how to do your specialty to the best level possible, right? And so I believe in specialty care. And, you know, if you put that on top of the fact that I think you want to always do the best for a patient, I'm always hoping that people will find their niche and do what's right. Now, can somebody do everything? I don't think so, right? So I think you can do a couple things good and the rest you can't do as well. So if you can't do it as well as somebody else, again, I think there's a patient there you shouldn't be doing it on. So that's my answer. What do I see happening is there's certainly a lot more of, you know, people doing more procedures with less training, and there's certainly a lot more training opportunities to do that. So it filters back on itself. I see right. dental schools that used to be taught by specialists are now taught by general dentists telling people to do more as well. I see corporate dentistry doing everything in-house, and I see dentists hiring people to work in their practice to do some of the procedures and doing it that way. Now, unfortunately, most of those people in their offices aren't team members. They're really just transients working their way through. And so, you know, not like they don't have a tent and a bed and a sleeping bag, but you know what I'm saying? It's not like somebody that's committed to your office forever and you're going to have a game plan, as opposed to, you know, in our generation, there were dentists and they did diagnosis and treatment planning and restorative, and they put together a team. You know, they had an endodontist and a surgeon and a periodontist and an orthodontist, and we worked as teams. You know, that's the Seattle Study Club mantra, right? Comprehensive interdisciplinary dentistry.
Right.
And I don't know where it's going to go in the future. I don't. There are still certainly people that believe in that vision, but there's a lot more disparate tracks. Now, sometimes I think I just did too much stuff in the 70s because, you know, I mean, that was like marshmallows and s'mores and things like that, of course, is what I was talking about.
Right.
Because it took, you know, years to get a referral base of, you know, 20 people or something, or 30 or 40 or whatever. We have 80 people, whatever. But you know what I mean? We hit a million dentists. And so maybe all along there's been people hiding in their offices and doing stuff or not doing stuff or doing too much or whatever. But, you know, it goes back to what we said before. If you know, what's the best thing for that patient?
Right. Right. And you know, you and I are both big, huge fans of Symposium, Seattle Study Club Symposium, hands down the single greatest educational experience you can ever have as a dentist ever. Now, one of my favorite things, I love the education, but what's more important is the relationships. You, myself, and Lipton, and Gene Ranieri, and all these great guys go to dinner. Now, I'm gonna fly right in the eye of the hurricane. Okay, so this is a very like hot topic, and I just want to know what your perspective is. And you and Gene see eye to eye. Let's say I'm a periodontist, Bob. And I'm doing what you're asking me to do.
By the way, still be a consultant. Don't be a
People always ask me, would you be a dentist? No, because I got thumbs. I got like 10 thumbs.
We can train monkeys. Don't worry.
You guys are going to get to know me. You're going to see I don't know anything. So I just hang around with great people. Now, I love this question because I get this. I'm a young periodontist, Bob. I'm trying to do what you're talking about. But like I hear every day of my GPs, they're placing implants. You have two choices. You can get angry. Or you can go, hey, look, it's going to happen. Give me your – what would you say to a young periodontist who's experiencing frustration when they hear that?
I think that, you know, I think you need to educate people and not get upset, because getting upset doesn't work. You want to create a relationship with them, so when things go wrong or when they need more help, you're there for them. Yeah. I mean, your initial reaction is what the hell, right? I mean, you know, why would you do that to somebody is my reaction, okay? But it doesn't help you to separate yourself and distance yourself from people. And so, you know, we believe, you know, we've run, you know, implant study clubs where we explain to people how to do things both surgically and restoratively. I think there'll always be people that will want the expert to do the implant. Right. And I think there's still always cases, even the people that do most of the implants, there's ridge augmentations and there's sinuses and, you know, full arch cases that most dentists will not want to drive into. And so the people that send the most implants, those oftentimes are people that do a few of them and realize the value in treatment plan them more than people that do bridges all day. And so it never helps you to distance yourself. Your first reaction is, you know, is to kill them. And you know,
but that's not, it's not helpful. Like you said, and I love what Gene said at dinner with you and I, he's like, look, I heard, let me help you. Do you know what I mean? And exactly. In that it's the giving spirit and they understand like, you're really good at what you do. And you know what I mean? And it builds value for what you do. Ultimately, I've had many orthodontists come to me and go like, when I hear people are doing ortho, I go, hey, come over to my office. Right. I want to help you. And what they do is they leave my office and they go, I could never even try what this guy does. Like, this is so good.
Yeah, we did an all-on-4 case today. And this morning, and the lady watching me do the implant says, you know, I think about doing implants a lot until I come and work with you, right? So, you know, because it's, you know, we're chewing bubble gum and listening to music and putting implants in, and, you know, it's, you know, it's we're like Burger King. We flip them a lot of times. So, yes. But it doesn't, I think it's important to, you know, it's a keep your enemies closer to your theory.
Yeah, absolutely. In life, you just got to learn to embrace a lot of the changes and things. So, Bob, you and I are going to have many of these conversations. We're going to call them fireside chats or so. I don't know what we're going to do. I always enjoy these. Give me, as we wrap this up, like, what would be your best piece of advice to a young dentist watching for a healthy career, on top of what you've already shared? Is there any last things you would say to a young dentist who's looking at a road ahead?
Boy, I would do your best to try to get yourself to 30,000 feet on a regular basis, because when you've got your nose in the game, you can be really, really frustrated with staff. You can be frustrated with patients. You can be frustrated with overhead. But, you know, we both know Todd Williams, you know, and Todd's been a speaker for the study club. Yeah. And Todd tells a great story about the difference between got to, have to, and get to. And, you know, after 42 years, I couldn't have picked a better profession. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a great life. You get to take care of people. You get to have relationships with people. You get to have people serve you as a team. So you get to play like a team sport. So, you know, but in the day to day of it, you get lost in that, in all of the little minutiae that's going on. But, you know, we get to be dentists. We get to help people. We get to work with staff people. We get to make a difference in people's lives. We get to have tons of friends. You know, I get to hang out with you 5 o'clock in the gym at Seattle Study Club. So it's the answer to me would be farsighted, you know, to reflect back. The other thing is that I hear a lot is, you know, the dentists are worried about the money. And I know very few dentists that haven't had an unbelievable lifestyle, mm-hmm. an unbelievable life. And I know at the beginning of school or you're coming out, it doesn't look like that, but you're all going to have a long window of opportunity. And, you know, the dentists are, you will not have to focus on the money. You'll be able to have a fabulous lifestyle. So I would like you to put that away, do what's best for the patient, and the money will be there for sure.
Yeah. I found the better you get, the bigger the byproduct in anything, whether it be joy, money, whatever, but it's always the byproduct. Yeah. So, buddy, I love this. What a great way to end a great week with a great friend and a great thought. Now, if you're watching this, couple things. Now, we've mentioned the Seattle Study Club Symposium. I'm just going to tell you, you got to go. So in January, some of the best clinicians in the world, if not the best clinicians in the world. There's nothing like it. This year, it will be in Florida. We posted a link to Symposium. Don't even think about it. Just go. Bob and I will be at there. We'll be in the gym at 5 and the bar at night. I swear, my wife, every time my wife goes, she's like, you hug so many men, hug and kiss so many men. I go, I love these people. Like, it's all, not only is the education world class, but all the entertainment, but the relationships. Bottom line, best thing I've ever been a part of, education-wise, professionally, anything, you got to go. Now, also too, Bob, I know people are going to want more of you. And Bob, you were very tame today. You're going to see, if you see Bob live, you're going to go, I can't believe he just said that. And you make no apologies. And it's one of the things that we love about you the most. You're just authentic. And today you were just kind of being nice because you probably know that my 92-year-old grandmother watches this. So, you know,
I was restrained. Correct.
Yeah, there you go. But I'll next time restrained. We're going to get you unrestrained. You also teach in our hygiene clubs, in our hygiene courses. Just, can you just speak what that's about? Because people might be like, sure. Well, I want to see Bob in action. So tell them what it is.
I'm lucky enough to get to work with you and your coaches in a seminar called the hygiene seminar. And in there, it's called Hygiene U, and I do what I call Perio U. So we really go from A to Z and talking about how to talk to patients, how to do exams, and what a perio program looks like and what perio health looks like. And so I have a great time spending 2 days with you. I think I'm back the 1st and 2nd of November, something like that, the very beginning of November. And, you know, everybody the greatest part is that the people really make it move forward and take action, you know, upon what we talk about. And the results are amazing in terms of everybody doing a ton more perio and getting a ton people more healthy. So it's really, I have a great time. It's not done after 35 clinical hours, and so I get to have fun with everybody.
Amen, brother. Amen. So stick around, Bob, while we say goodbye to everybody else. We posted a link to the hygiene course. Check it out. Come visit us. Hang out with us. You will absolutely love it. So I hope you enjoyed today. If you did, which I know you did, just do us a huge favor. Hit the share button. Share it with your friends. I'm going to have Bob back for a whole bunch of great other conversations, thought processes, even deeper dive in perio. And keep sending us things that you'd love to see. I'm going to ask him some tough questions, get him to sweat. And we'll have some fun taking this apart. So Bob, thank you so much, my friend. I love you, and I just love having you on here. And
love you, sir. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, brother. And you guys, until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show. You guys have a great weekend. Thank you.